two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
California is home to the largest number of foster care youth in the country. At any given time, about 60,000 kids are attempting to navigate the system, often while trying to overcome a troubled past. While some will find loving families, others will be on a constant journey to find the right home instead of doing what they should be doing, just being kids. In California, youth become emancipated at 21, meaning they're no longer eligible for foster care. After that, they're pretty much on their own, and the system isn't really set up to help them succeed once they're ready to enter the workforce or to build a life for themselves. Foster care youth are disproportionately at risk for incarceration, and in California, 1 in 4 emancipated youth are homeless.
I believe a lot of focus should go to this age population that we call transition age youth. It seems like people are more attractive to working with the little kids, the precious little ones, instead of working with the older ones. Some people focus on if a kid has a tattoo and they have a mustache, they can deal with it on their own. Let's forget about them and let's give the ones with the ponytails a chance. But our population needs to get intense services.
Franco Vega is the director of the Right Way Foundation, a Los Angeles-based center helping youth in their transition to self-sufficiency as they exit the foster care system. Through mental health counseling, job placement, and housing assistance, Franco and his team are picking up the slack of a system that's failing our children.
I wanted to be more than a stats, you know, like less than what, 10% graduate from college. Like, I want to be more than what they say we are.
This week, I sit down with Franco and Amber Baker, a graduate and ambassador of the Right Way program, to hear about their firsthand experiences with the system and their hopes for revolutionizing it. This is Our America. I'm your host, Julian Castro.
Well, thank you, Mr. Secretary, for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I appreciate you making the time. If y'all could just introduce yourselves and tell me how you know each other.
Well, my name is Franco Vega. I'm the executive director and the founder of the Right Way Foundation.
My name is Amber Baker. I know Franco through the Right Way Foundation. I've been knowing him about 2016.
We've known Amber for a long time. I can tell how long I've known Amber by how many buildings we have had. So we've moved from one location to another location, and we've taken Amber with us. And Amber is a graduate and alumni and an ambassador of the Right Way Foundation. She represents all the foster youth that come into our program.
Amber, you have had an amazing personal journey to where you are now, overcome a lot. Could you talk to me a little bit about your journey?
So I was born with drugs in my system, so I ended up getting took in as I was a baby. I ended up getting back in the system in middle school.
Amber briefly left the system to live with her dad and his girlfriend, but what was supposed to be a reprieve from foster care resulted in beatings and sexual abuse. Unfortunately, Amber's experience isn't uncommon. Foster care youth are at high risk for abuse, neglect, or abandonment, which often result in post-traumatic stress. In fact, former foster youth are twice as likely as veterans to experience PTS later in life.
I was going from home to home. When I got in high school, my high school counselor ended up taking me in. So I'm still, I'm still mm-hmm. getting better. I'm still dealing with it. My mouth can still go from 0 to 100, but I'm learning to deal mm-hmm. with it, as I'm dealing with what I, you know, went through, honestly. So once I heal, you know, my mouth will heal too, so.
You've been through a lot. What was your low point?
I would say about 2010. I just had got from one home. I was placed with my auntie, and it actually wasn't going good at all. And I ended up trying to take my own life. And then I ended up being placed with my sister, and she was already going through her own stuff. You know, we went through it as kids, and she had her kid going through it. And, you know, she used to put me out of her house. So I was sleeping, you know, in downtown LA at the parks and on benches. Because I'm only literally like, what, 13 going through this, not knowing nothing, like where I'm going to go, what I'm going to do, and, you know, where I'm going to eat, and that. It was a lot.
And what kept you going?
Honestly, I end up getting a really good support system, I want to say. You know, like, I end up getting people that wasn't biological, my family, that, you know, let's apply to college and let's do this. And, you know, they wanted to see more for me, and that made me want to see more for myself. If you met me before, my attitude when I was, especially high school, you know, I was going through what I was going through. So my attitude and my demeanor was just, I had a bad attitude, but I wanted to be more than a stats, you know, like less than what, 10% graduate from college. Like, I don't want to be that stat. I want to be more than what they say we are.
The foster care youth are survivors. They've been through some of the toughest, unimaginable circumstances that a kid can go through, and they haven't given up. And that's what people need to focus in on, is that how much adversity they have dealt with and trauma they have dealt with. Amber wasn't lying when she said about her attitude when she came into our office. She was a firecracker, but she is so loyal. And, you know, that's what people should recognize about foster care system. They wasn't asked to be born. They were dealt a bad hand. And, you know, just give them an opportunity and a chance.
Franco has come to this understanding because, sadly, he's heard so many stories just like Amber's. And because he's been there himself.
Sadly, I lost my dad when I was 10 to alcoholism. And then I lost my mom when I was 15 to cancer. I know what these kids are missing. I know how to be a part of a family, but not really being a part of a family, someone just taking me in. I know how to keep trauma inside, and it affects the outcome. It affects my decision makings. I was in and out of juvenile hall, running the streets in the 80s in Los Angeles due to lack of supervision and abuse and trauma. So I joined a gang to become my family. And so when my mom died, I was rescued by an African-American family in South Central Los Angeles. And so I was raised by a family that was not blood to me. A probation officer was my parent, and the judge made sure that if I got out of line, I would go into camp. If I straighten up myself, then when I'm 18, they'll release me off probation. And then so that's happened, and I've joined the military. So I went right into the Army to save me. So this was a easy field to go in for myself. You know, 25 years I've been working with this population, and for a couple of years I tried to get out of it, but it seemed like the universe kept pulling me back into it. And so in 2011, I founded the Right Way Foundation, and we haven't looked back. And so we've serviced over 500 transition age foster care youth, 18 and over. And it's just a unique population that's been underserved and ignored.
You know, one of the things I remember from my conversation with the young folks who had gone through the foster care system was they said they wanted people that they could count on in their life.
Correct. And that's all they want. They want someone there because trauma is something we keep passing down to each other. And the data shows that 50% of foster kids will have kids and their kids will end up in the system. So it's a cycle that we have to break. I have four kids now, and I'm a grandfather, and I don't abuse or talk to any of my children the way my mom talked to me. I don't drink and abuse alcohol at all, and definitely won't do it in front of my kids like my dad did in front of me. So yeah, it's just these kids need someone to trust and count on. If we promise something to Amber, we have to fulfill that promise. If I say I'm going to get her a job, I get her a job. If I say I'm going to give her some money for food or housing allowance, I have to provide that for her. If I say I'm going to be there for her, I have to be there for her at any time, 24/7. We don't take days off at the Right Way Foundation. All of my staff, they have to be available 24/7 for the youth we serve. Some of our therapists see therapists outside of Right Way Foundation on their own. And they come back and tell me the stories that one of our therapists was in a session with her therapist and was crying. And then her therapist at 40 minutes cut it off, said, okay, time's up. We'll continue this next time. How do you do that? If my biological kids are crying to me, we don't cut them off and say, Joshua, it's time to cut this off. Let's talk about this next week. No, you keep talking to them until something evolves, until the crying at least stops.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
The Right Way Foundation has celebrated many successes with foster youth, but it's a constant uphill battle with many systemic obstacles working against them. One of these is what's known as the foster care to prison pipeline. As the name suggests, the policies and practices of one system act as a conduit to another, the criminal justice system.
So you have folks that leave a foster care system and they're in survival mode. And when you're in survival mode, you make some horrible decisions. And when you make those decisions, the law is there to scoop you up and put you right into prison. So now you went from a foster care system that really didn't care not a lot about you right into another prison system that's not going to care a lot about you. And so that's why we say to prison, the pipeline. And that's what we say to foster care, the homelessness system, because the data do show that that's where our folks are going to end up if they don't have one or two caring adults in their life.
Amber, you talked about housing, and I understand that you have struggled to find affordable housing. Can you talk to me about that experience?
I'm still struggling, honestly. You know, I'm grateful that I have a roof over my head, but it is so expensive out here. Like, my last place I had on my own, it was a studio. It was affordable, but it wasn't in LA, so... Mind you, everybody I know is here, so I was staying all the way out in, like, Bellflower and there, and then also I stayed in, like, East LA, so all my people that I know is here, so I have to live farther in order to survive, but even then, you still have to pay light bill, water bill, your phone bill, your car, your insurance, but... I literally been looking for a place since a year now. honestly. And I still haven't really been able to find anything because it's so expensive. And it's like you have to have multiple jobs in order to survive, you know? And it sucks, but that's just life.
Well, sadly, to piggyback off of Amber, it costs about a good $1,300 to have a studio or a small one bedroom in the city of Los Angeles. And yeah. Then you have to have good credit, and then you have to have three times the amount to move in. And so a lot of folks are discriminating against our younger population. You know, who's going to risk renting to a 21, 23-year-old with three jobs? And that's unfair. And so you're putting in a foster youth who comes from a lot of trauma. And then if they're getting over their trauma, we're going to move in another person that have to be on the same page. And what if they're not on the same page? And that could be a war right there in itself. So, yeah. And then we train our youth when they become parents. If they run into any law enforcement, don't talk about the foster care system, because once a cop knows or law enforcement knows that our kids have been in the foster care system, that brings up a red flag. Oh, well, they came from a bad environment, so let's really pay attention to them, you know. And we've heard it thrown up in court. We've heard county council say, well, this kid grew up in the foster care system. We're like, well, you can't use that against them. This is your system, you know?
And yeah, that's like a, you know, like a scarlet letter basically on them.
Correct. You're trying to take a kid from his home and make him fit into a stranger's home. And that just doesn't work. You should just fix the family, you know? Fix the young mothers and young dads that never was shown how to be a successful parent. They picked up some bad behaviors. And the cycle continues. Amber was blessed when she found her guidance counselor and took her in. That's a diamond in the rough. You know, who has that? I had to go to the Army to get my training. And so the military showed me how to step up and be responsible. But we're not teaching our youth how to be young adults, checking their credit, having a bank book, buying a car, proper shopping, stuff like that. Some of our foster youth, when they get their first big major check, they go blow their money right away because they're buying things they never had.
We look at what's happening to foster care youth after they're emancipated. People look at that in amazement who are not familiar with the system. And even those who are familiar with the system must certainly be intensely frustrated with it. What are we not doing that we should be doing to make sure that people have a better chance in life than they seem to right now?
I've been doing this business for 25 years, and the money keeps going up. Our budget for the foster care system keeps rising, but the outcomes are still the same. It costs about $75,000 a year for one kid to go through the foster care system. Where's that $75,000 going to? We could take $15,000 of that and fix the family right away. Help pay the rent, help pay for some food, babysitting costs, child care. But that's not the case. They dump a lot of more money for law enforcement, and we can't keep pushing cops and law enforcement. The funding can't keep going to law enforcement. It has to go into providers.
And there have been some recent developments on that front. In April, California allocated $42 million to address the needs of foster care youth, which have only increased with the coronavirus pandemic. And in June, Northern California's Santa Clara County started a pilot program to provide a $1,000 monthly stipend for foster youth transitioning out of the system to help pay for basic necessities like clothing, food, and housing.
I think a universal basic income for foster kids to a certain age will be a great start, because it's mathematically, it's just dollars and cents. These kids, like you said, the homelessness, they're homeless because they can't afford to pay a rent.
But it may not be enough. The coronavirus pandemic has only made things more precarious for foster youth. Many places that transitional youth rely on have shut down as a result, like college dorms for housing or centers like Right Way for group therapy sessions. Hubs that offer a sense of community are now strictly appointment only. During the pandemic, foster youth often have had little choice but to return to previous housing situations they've tried hard to escape. Reimagining what we do in the foster care system and how we do it is more important than ever.
The foster care system doesn't think outside the box. It's always in a box. We can't do something for this kid, or they can't do this. No, if you could do it for your biological kid, why can't you do it for the foster care youth? I would like to see if the county gets involved with the families, fix the families, and stop taking them out the family as an answer. You know, we jokingly say Department of Children and Family snatchers, and we should be Department of Children and Family saviors. Focus in on the family. Find out what's going on. If a woman is getting abused by her husband or boyfriend, you know, they take the kid away. Why is that? That mother loves her kid. She's just getting beat up by an abusive man. The answer is not take the kid away from the mother. Start putting resources into the families. So that would be my solution. I don't need more cops. A cop is not going to save a foster kid. But a community-based organization or someone like Amber's mentor will save the foster care system.
Welcome to The Dough, where cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, season two is here. Hosted every week by me, X-Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season two of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And we would like to invite you on a hilarious and heartfelt journey each week on The Deep Dive. From navigating the chaos of motherhood and family to exploring the depths of grief and loss, we are just two best friends who process life together and with you guys. Discover our secrets to finding joy amidst the madness and get ready for unfiltered conversations about life, love, and everything in between. And nails. We talk a lot about nails. Now, community is everything to us at The Deep Dive. We believe in the power of connection and the strength that comes from supporting one another, and we would love to have you with us. So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Amber, what changes would you like to see in the system after your personal experience with it and your work to try and change it?
I would say these social workers, like, I'm not saying they all just bad, but it got to be better. They support needs to be better for these kids. My social worker checked in once a month, hand me a check, and that was it. I had all lady social workers, and they never really sat down and was like, you know, here's the goal, or where do you want to go, or, you know, like, they didn't help us with nothing. It was literally a check once a month, and that was it. It has to be way more than that. You know, the thing is, maybe if I would have reached out while I was homeless before, I would have been able to sleep somewhere. But me, you know, I grew up fighting for myself, you know, and doing for myself and not asking. So when I did not have a place to sleep, it was hard for me to ask. When I was 21, once they stopped the checks, I was still staying where I was staying for a little bit, but I ended up becoming homeless, sleeping in my car. That's actually when I lost my job, and that's around the time I ended up meeting The Right Way, Franco.
And how did you find The Right Way Foundation?
Actually, my mom that took me in, she ended up knowing somebody that knew Franco. And so she ended up calling me, like, go here tomorrow. So I ended up going to the Right Way Foundation the next day. And ever since then, like, they've been there since day one, literally. And especially the therapist, like, she's with me. I can call her on Sunday and she's there, you know. So honestly, if I didn't have, you know, my mom right now, like, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have nowhere to live. You know, she don't have to let me live here. You know, I don't even pay rent. Like, I try giving her and she doesn't even take it, you know, like, but I'm grateful. 95% of the foster youth don't have that. I couldn't go to my biological family and ask them to if I can sleep under their roof and live with them, you know, like, it's just the support that we get. We don't get it. That's the thing. And it sucks.
With the help of Right Way, Amber's well on her way to earning a psychology degree that will put her in an even more qualified position to help high school teens. A testament to the center's comprehensive approach to caring for foster youth.
I really do love education. Once I graduate my BA, I just want to get my master's and then start my career. So that's my goal by 30. I got about 4 years.
All right. Well, you're well on your way.
Yeah.
Now that you're 26 years old and you have perspective on it, what would you say to a young girl who's 6 years old, who's right in the middle of her foster care journey?
Don't give up, to keep going. There are better days. It's hard, but, you know, try to find a place where they can help you heal, be there for you, like a safe haven, you know, because that's what I wanted, you know, and I got it. Somebody to be there and care for me and love me and show me that, you know, my parents have not wanted me, but I do have people in my life that do care for me and want to see me be better, you know, and go somewhere with my life. So
we're family now, you know, a true family. It doesn't have to be blood. Family is not blood, you know, a family is love.
Well, Amber and Franco, thank you so much for sharing your journey and for everything that you're doing to help make sure that things are okay. And more than that, for so many young people today. Buena suerte. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.
Amber and Franco have plenty to be proud of. They both overcame incredible adversity at the hands of a system ill-equipped to provide the comprehensive care that every child in America deserves. But there are thousands of youth who aren't as fortunate to have gotten out of an abusive household or gone on to pursue higher education, who haven't found that sense of family that Franco spoke about. They've already experienced so much trauma. We owe it to them to address the many cracks in the system and to work to make sure they don't fall through them. Next week, we talk to a man who has devoted his career in politics to fighting for the people left behind.
So in other words, to take these issues to the people, not just in Washington, but to talk about how people are getting ripped off with wage theft and not getting the overtime that they deserve. And God knows during this COVID, if we've seen anything, it's so many workers are forced to work in unsafe working conditions. They're dying because they don't have the protections that they need. So it's not sitting in Washington coming up with complicated ideas. It's going out to the people and making them aware that the United States government is listening to them. That's what interests me.
Our America is a Lemonada original. This episode was produced by Matthew Simonson. Jackie Danziger is our supervising producer. Our associate producer is Julia Yort. Keegan Zema is our technical director. Music is by Hannes Brown. Executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax, Jessica Cordova-Kramer, and Julian Castro. Help others find our show by leaving us a rating and writing a review. Follow us at Lemonada Media across all social platforms, or find me on Twitter at Julian Castro, or on Instagram at Julian Castro TX.
Lemonada.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.